Chapter 8
"What?" Isadora asked.
I said, "Finally, as the sun rose, Coach Genghis had us stop running laps and let us go to bed," Klaus said. "My sister didn't mean that she didn't hear you," Duncan explained. "She meant that she heard you, but she didn't believe that's really what you meant. And to tell you the truth, I can scarcely believe it myself, even though I saw it with my own eyes." "I can't believe it either," Violet said, wincing as she took a bite of the salad that the masked people had served for lunch. It was the next afternoon, and all three Baudelaire orphans were doing a great deal of wincing, a word which here means frowning in pain, alarm, or distress. When Coach Genghis had called last night's activities S-O-R-E, he had merely used the name as an acronym for Special Orphan Running Exercises. But the three children thought that the name S-O-R-E was even more appropriate than that. After a full night of S-O-R-E, they'd been sore all day. Their legs were sore from all that running. When they'd finally entered the orphan shack to go to sleep, they had been too tired to put on their noisy shoes, so their toes were sore from the claws of the tiny territorial crabs. And their heads were sore, not only from headaches, which often occur when one doesn't get enough sleep, but also from trying to figure out what Coach Genghis was up to in making them run all those laps. The Baudelaire legs were sore, the Baudelaire toes were sore, the Baudelaire heads were sore, and soon the muscles on the sides of the Baudelaire mouths would be sore from wincing all day long. It was lunchtime, and the three children were trying to discuss the previous evening with the Quagmire triplets, who weren't very sore and not nearly as tired. One reason was that they had been hiding behind the archway, spying on Genghis and the Baudelaires, instead of running around and around the luminous circle. The other reason was that the Quagmires had done their spying in shifts. After the Baudelaires had to run the first few laps and there was no sign of them stopping, the two triplets had decided to alternate between Duncan sleeping and Isadora spying, and Duncan spying and Isadora sleeping. The two siblings promised each other that they would wake up the sleeping one if the spying one noticed anything unusual. "I had the last shift," Duncan explained, "so my sister didn't see the end of S-O-R-E. But it doesn't matter. All that happened was that Coach Genghis had you stop running laps and let you go to bed. I thought that he might insist on getting your fortune before you could stop running." "And I thought that the luminous circle would serve as a landing strip," Isadora said, "for a helicopter, piloted by one of his assistants, to swoop down and take you away. The only thing I couldn't figure out was why you had to run all those laps before the helicopter showed up." "But the helicopter didn't show up," Klaus said, taking a sip of water and wincing. "Nothing showed up." "Maybe the pilot got lost," Isadora said. "Or maybe Coach Genghis became as tired as you did and forgot to ask for your fortune," Duncan said. Violet shook her sore head. "He would never get too tired to get our fortune," she said. "He's up to something, that much is for sure, but I just can't figure out what it is." "Of course you can't figure it out," Duncan said. "You're exhausted. I'm glad Isadora and I thought of spying in shifts. We're going to use all our spare time to investigate. We'll go through all of our notes and do some more research in the library. There must be something that can help us figure it out."
"I'll do research too," Klaus said, yawning.
"I'm quite good at it." "I know you are," Isadora said, smiling. "But not today, Klaus. We'll work on uncovering Genghis's plan, and you three can catch up on your sleep. You're too tired to do much good in a library or anywhere else." Violet and Klaus looked at each other's tired faces, and then down at their baby sister, and they saw that the Quagmire triplets were right. Violet had been so tired that she had taken only a few notes on Mr. Romora's painfully dull stories. Klaus had been so tired that he had incorrectly measured nearly all of Mrs. Bass's objects. And although Sunny had not reported what she had done that morning in Nero's office, she couldn't have been a very good administrative assistant, because she had fallen asleep right there in the cafeteria, her little head on her salad, as if it were a soft pillow instead of leaves of lettuce, slices of tomato, gobs of creamy honey mustard dressing, and crispy croutons, which are small toasted pieces of bread that give a salad some added crunch. Violet gently lifted her sister's head out of the salad and shook a few croutons out of her hair. Sunny winced, made a faint, miserable noise, and went back to sleep in Violet's lap. "Perhaps you're right, Isadora," Violet said.
We'll stumble through the afternoon somehow and get a good night's sleep tonight. If we're lucky, Vice Principal Nero will play something quiet at tonight's concert, and we can sleep through that as well. You can see, with that last sentence, just how tired Violet really was, because if we're lucky is not a phrase that she or either of her siblings used very often. The reason, of course, is quite clear. The Baudelaire orphans were not lucky. Smart, yes. Charming, yes. Able to survive austere situations, yes. But the children were not lucky, and so wouldn't use the phrase, if we're lucky, any more than they would use the phrase, if we're stalks of celery, because neither phrase was appropriate. If the Baudelaire orphans had been stalks of celery, they would not have been small children in great distress, and if they had been lucky, Carmelita Spatz would not have approached their table at this particular moment and delivered another unfortunate message.
"Hello, you cake sniffers,"
she said.
"Although, judging from the baby brat, you're more like salad sniffers. I have another message for you from Coach Genghis. I get to be his special messenger because I'm the cutest, prettiest, nicest little girl in the whole school."
"If you were really the nicest person in the whole school," Isadora said, "you wouldn't make fun of a sleeping infant. But never mind, what is the message?"
"It's actually the same one as last time,"
Carmelita said,
"but I'll repeat it in case you're too stupid to remember. The three Baudelaire orphans are to report to the front lawn tonight, immediately after dinner."
"What?" Klaus asked.
"Are you deaf, as well as cake sniffy?"
Carmelita asked.
"I said..."
"Yes, yes, Klaus heard you," Isadora said quickly. "He didn't mean that kind of what. We have received the message, Carmelita. Now please go away."
"That's two tips you owe me,"
Carmelita said, but she flounced off. "I can't believe it," Violet said. "Not more laps. My legs are almost too sore to walk, let alone run." "Carmelita didn't say anything about more laps," Duncan pointed out. "Maybe Coach Genghis is putting his real plan into action tonight. In any case, we'll sneak out of the recital again and keep an eye on you." "In shifts," Isadora added, nodding in agreement. "And I bet we'll have a clear picture of his plan by then. We have the rest of the day to do research." Isadora paused and flipped open her black notebook to the right page. She read, "Don't worry, Baudelaires, don't feel disgrace. The Quagmire triplets are on the case." "Thank you," Klaus said, giving Isadora a tired smile of appreciation. "My sisters and I are thankful for all your help, and we're going to put our minds to the problem, even though we're too exhausted to do research. If we're lucky, all of us working together can defeat Coach Genghis." There was that phrase again, "if we're lucky," coming out of the mouth of a Baudelaire, and once again it felt about as appropriate as "if we're stalks of celery." The only difference was that the Baudelaire orphans did not wish to be stalks of celery. While it is true that if they were stalks of celery, they would not be orphans because celery is a plant and so cannot really be said to have parents, Violet, Klaus, and Sunny did not wish to be the stringy, low-calorie vegetable. Unfortunate things can happen to celery as easily as they can happen to children. Celery can be sliced into small pieces and dipped into clam dip at fancy parties. It can be coated in peanut butter and served as a snack. It can merely sit in a field and rot away if the nearby celery farmers are lazy or on vacation. All these terrible things can happen to celery, and the orphans knew it. So if you were to ask the Baudelaires if they wanted to be stalks of celery, they would say of course not. But they wanted to be lucky. The Baudelaires did not necessarily want to be extremely lucky, like someone who finds a treasure map or someone who wins a lifetime supply of ice cream in a contest, or like the man, and not, alas, me, who was lucky enough to marry my beloved Beatrice and live with her in happiness over the course of her short life. But the Baudelaires wanted to be lucky enough. They wanted to be lucky enough to figure out how to escape Coach Genghis's clutches, and it seemed that being lucky would be their only chance. Violet was too tired to invent anything, and Klaus was too tired to read anything, and Sunny, still asleep in Violet's lap, was too tired to bite anything or anybody. And it seemed that even with the diligence of the Quagmire triplets,
The word diligence here means ability to take good notes in dark green and pitch black notebooks. They needed to be lucky if they wanted to stay alive. The Baudelaires huddled together as if the cafeteria were extremely cold, wincing in soreness and worry. It seemed to the Baudelaire orphans that they wanted to be lucky more than they had in their entire lives.